Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So within the category of Artha Shakti Bhu, Dwani, where it's the meaning of the words apart from the specific words that generates the suggestion, and also we're having a chain of suggestions, not just a single suggestion, but suggestion on top of suggestion. We had 12 subcategories. The first three subcategories are according to whether it's the word's natural meaning that generates the suggestion, whether it's a special, unusual use of the words by the author, or by unusual use of the words by a character created by the author. We have looked at the four examples, actually three verses, that exemplified the four kinds of natural use of words, where the first, where a vastu is suggesting an alankara and alankara vastu, and the four categories. We have one suggestion suggesting another suggestion. So the first item, the vastu or the alankara, is being suggested by the words and their meaning. And then that suggestion is suggesting another suggestion, which is either a vastu or alankara. So now we still have to deal with, what if the author uses the words in an unusual way, and by his clever use of words, he's generating the dwani. So we have to see examples of that. Kavi Praudotis. The generation is based on the clever use of the words by the kavi, the poet. Example. Spandate yadi padadi tadasam syandate madurimamrita dara sangata pavanajad Ratatinam angato madukana iva bhumau. Spandate yadi, if trembles, the feet and so on of those girls, if their feet and so on move at all, syandate madurimamritada, then a flood of nectar, there's a downpour of nectar, of sweetness that flows from, exudes from those feet. If they just move their feet. Sangatak Pavanajad. This is Panchami. Sangatak. By the contact with the wind, Pavanaja. Actually, dictionary says Pavanaja is Hanuman, the son of the wind. But Pavanaja here is being used to mean wind, not Hanuman. Hanuman has nothing to do with this story. Vratitinam, that's the bees. Angato, from the limbs, the body. Madhukana iva, like particles of honey or of pollen. Honey. Particles of honey from the bodies of the bees. On the earth, due to the contact of the wind. In other words, the wind is blowing off little particles of honey from the bodies of the bees, and the honey's falling on the earth. Now that's iva. That's the metaphor to compare it to the nectar flowing from the feet of the gopis when they move those feet. Okay. Atra kavi pradokti, not purva, but... This is not natural use of the words, because what's going on here Just see, these feet are something super mundane. That just by moving the feet, there's a flood of nectar raining down. So, what's implied by that? Wait. Vastu Bhuta Artha. Okay. There's a first dwani. The words say that the flow, there's a flood of nectar raining down whenever they move their feet. Implied by that is a certain vastu. That their feet are something super mundane. That's implied. That's suggested. That's the first suggestion. But from that second suggestion comes a second vastu suggestion. The idea that if this is what it's like when they just walk, what it must be like when they're dancing in the Rasleela. That's what he says here. And then you have the second half of the verse. About it being compared to when the honey is blown off from the bodies of the bees by the wind. It's that the gopis can be compared to bees. That's upama alankar. It's nowhere said that the gopis are like bees, but it's implied by making an analogy to bees. So the alankar of upama or metaphor is being suggested here. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains why. Madhurya, sweetness, is not a concrete physical entity. How can you have a rainfall of sweetness? It usually rains water. You might talk about raining cats and dogs, and you actually have a cartoon with cats and dogs falling out of the sky. But at least cats and dogs are some concrete entity. They could, if you drop them out of an airplane, they could fall to the ground. But how do you have a rainfall of madhurya, sweetness? It's not a physical entity. That's where we're going beyond the ordinary use of words, and the author is stretching the language beyond its normal limits to start talking about a rainfall of sweetness. You don't talk about that in ordinary prose, ordinary use of language. Maybe that's Vishwanath Chakravarti's explanation why here we put it in the category of a suggestion made by the author's abnormal or special use of the language.
And another example of this can be an ocean of auspicious qualities.
Is what?
Of the same not natural uses of words.
Yeah. It's a poetic. In that case, it's a metaphor. Okay, but here we're taking such special use of language and creating a second dwani out of it. You see? It serves the purpose of generating the dwani. A metaphor can be, a metaphor is nice, but in itself it's just an alankar, it's just an ornament on the body. But when that ornament generates dwani, then you're actually bringing life to the poetry, not just decorating a dead body with ornaments.
So the first...
There's one thing between just a metaphor. Poets, even cheap poets, can make plenty of metaphors. Lousy poets make metaphors all the time. But a metaphor comes to life when it generates dwani.
This... Double dvani is of an alankara.
Not here. Is it? Well, Sorry, and there are two halves of the verse. In the first half of the verse, a vastu is a vastu suggested, and that further suggests another vastu. But in the second half of the verse, the vastu is generating, his same vastu is generating an alankar, upama alankar, the comparison of the gopis to the bees.
I mean, there's a double dvani in the second half. Like, there's two parts. There's the first double vani and then the second double vani.
Well, what's this? They share the same first part. The first part is, you know, the second half of the verse goes with the first half of the verse. The first half of the verse already told us that whenever the gopis move their feet, there's a shower of nectar. And then that's your first, and that implies the gopis' feet are something really special.
Okay.
And then you say that's just like the honey dripping off the bees. So the first one you're borrowing from the first half of the verse.
Okay, so it's the same.
We're just adding another second one.
It's like the vastu, which is the super mundane feet.
The super mundaneness of the feet, yeah.
That
generates rises, the second half of the verse, yeah. Makes another dvani, which is an alankar.
Okay.
The alankar of considering the gopis to be like bees. Upama alankar, or metaphor.
Usually we compare Krishna to be like Brahmana, but in this case we have gopis who are compared to bees. So does it mean that Krishna must be some lotus petal? What is the implied meaning in this case? I don't know.
Well, maybe. I don't know if Krishna is even mentioned, but in this context, but. Okay, let's try the next one, next example. Anyway, that's an example of two of the four kinds, because we have two different things going on in the two different halves of the verse. So we got two done. We have two more to cover. We have another verse. Go kule pula jabala vadunam shyama dama nimano ratapajam no jagama na jagama viramam Sauridam vidaya eva jagurne. Well, of the young girls of good families in Gokula, Manorata Bhajam, who partake of fantasizing about the Shamadama, the brilliant effulgence of that is Krishna. The sauridam is the subject of the second half of the main verb. Najagama viramam, their friendship with Krishna. They're obsessed with Krishna, and their friendship with him. No jagama, najagama viramam. It couldn't manifest because they're at home with their relatives, so they can't exhibit their love for Krishna. Also, they couldn't stop it. Najagama, it didn't stop either. It didn't manifest and it didn't stop. What did it do? It simply churned around in their hearts. Rideye jagurni. That's the Atmanipada Paroksha Bhuta. Paroksha Bhuta, what is it called? Hoksija. Okay, also here the poet is stretching the use of the language. What's being suggested is no jagama, their love for Krishna, their friendship with Krishna did not manifest, means or suggests the vastu that they were very embarrassed or very shy. Okay, just so much shy that they couldn't express anything about their love for Krishna in front of others. Najagama viramam vidyakshobatishayo. And that suggests another vastu. No, I'm sorry. The words suggest a different vastu. that there was a great disturbance in their hearts. They just couldn't, you know, the love, you know, they couldn't manifest the love, but it couldn't go away because their hearts were very, very disturbed. And, okay, this is called Utpreksha Alankara. I'm sorry, I looked up Utpreksha, I forgot what it said. Utpreksha is when you use a metaphor, like comparing something to the beauty of the moon, in order to emphasize the super excellence of the thing that you're comparing it. You're comparing someone's face to the moon, and you do it in such a way to show that that face is much better than all other faces. That's called Utpreksha. When you elevate the thing that you're talking about to a very high state by special use of metaphor, of comparison. So when you say the love just wouldn't go away, that means that was very powerful love, exceptional love, that just wouldn't go away. Ordinary love, in due course of time, will go away. You know, you can always forget it. You get disturbed by somebody, infatuated, but the infatuation eventually goes away. You know, get married, and after 5 years, it'll go away. But this love for that the gopis have for Krishna, it just won't go away. So that is implying Utpreksha Alankar, that it's just different than all other friendships. Yes. So here, a vastu. The vastu is, as said in the first words, that it can't manifest because they're so shy. But that further suggests the Upreksha Alankar, that their love is super, is just unique. Yes.
So here, so this is an example of vastu
suggesting an Alankar.
Vastu suggesting an Alankar. So in the last example, this you said, or what I understood was that there was also a vastu suggesting an Alankara, but when I look in the Sanskrit, I see upa, this is the last sentence, the last few words, upa malankarena zvabavu tialankaru dvanita iti dveda.
Yes, I left that out. I didn't read to the end of the sentence here.
So
in the second half of the verse, first alankar is the upama alankar. The gopis are like the bees, and that suggests the second alankar of natural description. You know, a beautiful description of nature. You know, when you start talking about what the bees are buzzing around, and the trees are doing this, and the birds are doing that, then you've got a natural description. Sabhava opti alankar. So, yes, in the second half of that other verse, it's an Alankara suggesting an Alankara.
Okay.
Now we have a Vastu suggesting an Alankara.
In the first Alankara is the gopis compared to bees. In the
second
one,
the gopis are just like bees.
Okay.
And that suggests, if we turn the gopis into bees, now we got a natural description. Now we got a beautiful description of nature going on.
Or how they fall, like you described that, the pollen falls on the ground.
So that you're getting into a whole song and dance about nature.
But sometimes the
svabhava upti
are not necessarily connected. It's just something extra and nice, like for example.
Yes, the alankars themselves are just ornaments, but the dwani gives life to it. When an alankara is suggested by a dwani, then it's the dwani that actually is giving life to the poetry.
So the dvani here is this natural description.
Yeah.
That's the dvani. So the dvani is, there's like in Vrindavan, it's nice and natural.
But if you just give a natural description, it can be boring. You know, I've heard about this a million times, about bees and flowers and trees and clouds and lakes. And it can be boring if you just say it in so many words. But if you suggest it without saying it, then that's more powerful. Then it's really poetic. Yes.
We use an alankara. Also suggest not another alankara in the form of the beautiful setting, but also...
The example of bees is explicit. It's said in the words.
Yeah, I know, but...
They're like bees.
Yes.
But when you put it together and say the gopis are like bees... I'm sorry, it's not the example of bees. The verse just says... The situation is like when bees do this. And yes, the comparison of gopis, not example, but the comparison between the gopis and the bees, that's being suggested. And it makes the further suggestion.
What I want to ask is if, as you said, the comparison between the gopis and the bees suggests an alankara in the form of natural setting, may it also suggest a vasto, like, you know, that the gopis are also slim-waisted just like the bees are? No, for instance, because bees are very beautiful insects in some ways. Like, they have very slim waists.
Not all bees do. Some bees are really fat.
Well, they still have slim waists.
No, bumblebees are like...
They have slim waists. They have a lot of hair. Sorry. You do not see them, but regular smooth bees, they have... Both of them have very slim waists, but bumblebees have a lot of hair. That's why it's not seen. And they also have big eyes. It sounds like that. Can it also suggest something about vastu? Really, alankara suggesting vastu.
Yeah, there could be more going on than is mentioned here and in the commentary. Yeah. Especially if it's uttama kavya, you can discover additional suggestions here and there if you really look. Yes.
And then we have the example of pollen, which the bees collect, and we also have pollen on some parts of the gopis' bodies, which also happen to come on to Krishna's feet. Like, the whole thing is...
But this could be... There's, first of all, the suggestion of the upama alankar. What you're mentioning are the common qualities that gopis and bees have. That's actually components of... We didn't study upama alankar. But upama alankara has certain components, and one of the components is the sadrishya guna, the qualities of common qualities shared by the thing and the thing it's compared to. Okay, so that's not going beyond, that's actually part of the upama alankara, the points of comparison between the gopis and the bees. You need that. An upama can't stand without some point of comparison, either spoken or implied. And here, the whole alankar, upama alankar, is being implied, suggested. So therefore, the components of it, including the points of comparison, are being suggested. So it's not really additional, but it's part of that first dvani. Yes. You know, the gopis are like bees. Why? Why do you say gopis are like bees? Because they're thin-waisted, because they've got kumkum on them, like that.
Here, when it comes to the comparison between the gopis and the bees, the main idea that the poet is trying to give is that even when they move their feet, there is a flow of nectar. So, and that is being compared to honey. But then bees are only a natural place where you could find honey, where you're most likely to find honey sticking over, and is it that we have to stretch it more than that, or just a common place for honey? Because no, just like nectar is.
You mean you're doubtful about this, comparing the gopis to the bees? You don't think that's there? You don't think that's being implied?
Yeah, with the gopis, with the bees is not there, but then the whole instance of nectar flowing from just the movements of the feet of the gopis is like the honey that can fly away from the bees, like air flowing. Yes. But because We cannot speak about honey on the mouths of pigs or anything like that because it's not natural. It's not a common place for honey.
Yes.
A common place for honey is only bee.
Okay, and that's what's being said by the verse. That's the apparently that's the reason why it's an appropriate analogy. Because the gopi's feet is a natural place to find the nectar and the bee's body is a natural place to find the honey. But then there's more to it, hiding. What's being hidden by that, what's being expressed in a subtle way, is the comparison between the gopis are like bees. And then we must discover the reasons why the gopis are like bees. It gets us thinking. That's being suggested. It's not being said, but suggested. That's where the dvani is. That the upama alankar is being suggested. And then the second suggestion, the svabhavoti alankar, suggested by the first suggestion. It's not said in so many words, it's suggested. Which one? Yeah, okay. For the gopis who are obsessed with the vast, brilliant effulgence which is Krishna, these young girls of respectable families in Gokula, for them, their friendship for Krishna couldn't manifest, nor could it go away, could it stop, but it just swirled around, you know, trapped in their hearts. Suggested by that, by the statement that it didn't go away or it didn't manifest, is their shyness. That's suggested. And the words that say it didn't stop their love for Krishna. There's a suggestion that their hearts were very, very disturbed. But that's actually an example of utpreksha alankar. That by the comparison, their love is being exalted, being described as very great. Like something they swallowed and they can't choke it up and it just doesn't dissolve. It just keeps on churning in their stomachs compared to something like that. Let's try another one. Yes? They're in chapter 7 and 8. We can skip to them after we finish chapter 3. Some other topics. 5 is rasa. It's a big topic, but it's really... you're already familiar with rasa shastra from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so we don't need to go through that again. There's some discussion about the difference between kavya rasa and bhakti rasa. We'll look at that. But the details of rasa, we can read about them in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There's 10 chapters, but we won't be able to cover all of them. So after we finish with dvani, we can go to the alankars. Then we'll study Nyaya philosophy. Okay. Okay. Stumakin Trambo Dada Subaga Shambor Adishida Padambo jasyambo yakrita padam bostavatataha umayai datvardham vapur apadam ardham chabhavate gunebhyo nimuktaksa paramam abhav param abhavat brahma paramam. Oh boy, let's see what's happening here. We offer our praise to Lord Shiva. but he placed upon his head, Adishira. Or rather, actually, we offer our praise to the water that comes from your lotus feet. That's actually what's being said. We offer our praise to the water as being that comes out of your lotus feet. That's when, as Vamanadevi kicks the covering of the universe and the Ganga flows in. And that water, Lord Shiva placed upon his head, Adishira, Shambhur, it came upon the head of Lord Shiva. Ambodara Subhaga Shambhur. Subhaga. Ambodara Subhaga. I think that means that he's got an auspicious complexion like that of a Amboda, of a cloud, Lord Shiva. The water from Krishna's feet came onto his head. Okay, let me see if I can remember all this. Actually, according to this, it's addressed to a cloud. Ambodara. It's Sambodhanam. Give me a minute to read this. Ambodara Subhaga. It's addressed to Krishna. Sorry. O Krishna, who are Ambodara Subhaga, who are beautiful like a cloud. Ambodara Sundara. Ambodara Subhaga. The water that came from your feet, Lord Shiva put upon his head. Shidasi Padam Akrita. He made his head, the top of his head, the place for the water that came from your feet. And for that reason, and what's implied by that is, therefore, the Vastu is implied. Who else can we find better than you to praise? Since even Lord Shiva took the water from your feet and kept it on his head. Now that is called what is being implied. You can say it's a vastu, but what's being implied that there's no one else as praiseworthy as you. That's actually atishayokti alankar, where you're expressing the super excellence of something. Describing it, maybe by exaggeration, but you're describing it as superior to everything else, then that's an example, that's the use of atishaya alankar, atishaya ukti, exaggerated description of super excellence. It's actually an alankar being implied. That's the first 20, by being implied by the idea of the words. Tena. And then the second half of the verse says that Lord Shiva, who put the water from your feet on his head, he gave half of his body to Uma by marrying her. The wife becomes half the body of the husband. And he gave the other half to you, to Lord Vishnu. And then he was left without any qualities because he gave his whole body away, one half to his wife and one half to you, Vishnu. He became devoid of qualities. And that's how he became the Supreme Brahman, by giving his two halves of his body away. Well, let's see. How did he give the second half to Krishna? I don't think it says that here.
Anyway, he was left without any body, and that's how he became the Supreme Brahman. Okay, you know what's implied there? Avastu. Lord Shiva, okay, he had to give his body away to become Supreme Brahman, but you're Supreme Brahman even in this cowherd body. You are the Supreme Body. Supreme, absolute truth, assuming the form of a cowherd boy. Lord Shiva has to give up his form to become Brahman, but you're Brahman even in this current form. That's the Vastu, that's the second suggestion made by the first suggestion. And because actually Lord Shiva's body is eternal and there's no question of him giving it up, this is contrary to fact, and therefore the author is stretching logic and stretching the language to say things that are absurd. Yeah, how can Lord Shiva give up his body? He's got an eternal body. So in ordinary usage, no one could get away with saying that. But the poet in his own little world can say that, but it's abnormal use of the language and of logic by the poet. The poet can create a world that has its own logic. But in the ordinary world, you couldn't go out in the street and talk about Lord Shiva losing his body. People would throw stones at you. Let me see. Yeah, so the Atishaya Alankar that suggested in the first half of the verse, how there's no one better to praise than Krishna. Even Lord Shiva puts the water from his feet on his head. That's implying the first suggestion of the super excellence of Krishna, which is an example of Atishaya Alankar. And that Atishaya Alankar of the super excellence of Krishna implies a Vastu, that he's got to give up his body to become Parabrahma, but you're Parabrahman in the self-same body. That's a Alankara suggesting of us two. And that's it for the four kinds of, at least examples of each of the four kinds of suggestion made by the poet's unusual use of words. And that's it for today. Any questions? Yeah.
Like him giving half of his body to Uma while still holding on to it, and the other half is dedicated to the service of Lord Vishnu. Like half to the material nature, half to the spiritual nature. And I don't know. It's just... Does it strongly imply he's physically given up his body, or it's just
no? And the poet is really taking liberties to use a fuzzy kind of logic or invalid logic. This is a play on words. So that's why it's not a natural way to talk. It doesn't stand up logically.
But it says it comes across as an indication that Lord Shiva gave up his body, or just.
He says it in so many words. Lord Shiva gave half his body to his wife and half his body to you, and he was left out of the body, and that's how he became Parabrahman. That's what the words say. But those words are strange words. You know, only a poet can get away with that. Yes?
Even I heard this Kalidasa make such a usage when he says, he tells to Brahma that. Actually, he's looking at a woman, and then he's telling...
Who's doing this?
Kalidasa. That, he's telling that, he's looking at the beauty of a woman, and he's saying, oh, Brahma has made you, but otherwise I thought he was just a Vedadhyayana Jada. He was just a Vedadhyayana Jada. He's Jada in the... He has become completely Jada in Adhyayana of Vedas.
He's a stupid student of the Vedas.
Yeah, but then he has made you, so... That means he puts up this thing, but then it's nullified in his own statements.
Yes, that, yes.
He has made you, so he's not like that.
That's also poetic. Yes. That's another kind of upama, where the thing you're comparing it to is degraded in order to make the... You know, your moon's like your face is like the moon, but the moon's got spots on it.
You know, that's degrading the moon and to make the face sound better. So you're insulting Lord Brahma to make the comparison more vivid.
Example, he's saying that he was of the opinion like that Brahma is just a stupid student of the Vedas. He's telling that I was thinking like that Brahma is just a Veda Dhyana Jada. But then after seeing you, so that means yes. You're really beautiful. So seeing you, that misconception is gone.
Okay, he couldn't be as bad as I thought.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
I don't see how they're connected and one leads to the other.
Okay, maybe I don't either.
Okay.
You mean how the first suggestion makes the second suggestion?
Yeah.
The first suggestion being the Vachalankar, the Adishoya. Yeah, this figure of speech, which we haven't studied yet, and I don't remember exactly the formula for it. I can't remember what Atishaya Alankara actually, you know, how it's actually defined. Because this whole argument about Lord Shiva having to give his body, this is to substantiate Krishna's supremacy. So it's the foundation of the second suggestion is the first one. Krishna is better than everybody else, including Lord Shiva. Therefore, we can argue that Lord Shiva, you know, as evidence for that, that Lord Shiva has to give his body. But if he weren't already involved in pointing out that Krishna is better than everybody, including Lord Shiva, it would be irrelevant to talk about Lord Shiva giving up his body. But so it is the first suggestion suggesting the second. Yeah. Okay. All right, that's all for now. That's all I have prepared. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.